Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about Isekai, that is, Reborn in Another World. Of course, my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What's up?
So, Isekai is the Japanese name for a genre that has pretty much taken over Japanese manga, anime, etc. in the last, 6 years? Debatable.
Over the last 10 years, largely.
Debatable, but the point remains is there's been stories with the quote isekai formula. Basically, the protagonist is a character from one world that somehow spontaneously finds himself in a completely different world, has to adapt, figure things out, etc. Now, I'm going to start at the beginning, at least the beginning of what I think of when I think of adventure, pulpy stories that can fit the isekai formula. I'm, of course, talking about the granddaddy, John Carter of Mars.
Huh, okay. I hadn't considered that. That actually makes a lot of sense.
See, go ahead.
I was going to say, but and as much as we're talking about John Carter of Mars, we are not talking about the fucking movie from Disney.
The movie wasn't terrible. It wasn't great either. But the problem was, number one, is Disney didn't have faith in the team to make the movie they wanted to make, so they sort of butted in. And they marketed it as some sort of really weird movie that it wasn't.
This is true. I mean, for those that don't know, the basic gist of the John Carter Mars series is a... I forget if was he part of the Confederacy or was he was he for the North in the original stories?
He was a Southern gentleman.
Okay. After the Civil War, he's being chased through, you know, the American West. He crawls into this cave, which miraculously is a warp gate of some types that takes him to the planet Barsoom, which he later discovers is the red planet itself, Mars. And has, for lack of a better, he has like the classic, you know, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, kind of that classic sci-fi, what used to be considered science fiction before it was predominantly steamrolled over by the ideas that science fiction involves spaceships and aliens. Although there are aliens in the John Carter series.
Absolutely, a lot of them. The John Carter series, I only just started reading it, so I am way behind on this stuff. I haven't even finished the first book yet. This is really, you know, Red is really the biggest expert John Carter out of the three of us.
I wouldn't say expert. I read them as a kid. I don't remember them all. I didn't read all of them either, because it got fucked up. But started dealing with, like, his grandchildren and shit, and they're just boring.
Yeah, I think my first encounter with the, like, you know, John Carter and thus the isekai genre is my dad's old comic books. He had a bunch of the John Carter of Mars series that came out. I believe it was DC Comics from the 70s. You know, he's got like the green skin. What did they call the forearm?
Jeddak.
Sorry, how do you say that, Red?
Jeddak.
What Red said, and, you know, you got Deja Thoris, like Princess of Mars, and her, you know, in her slave Leia outfits, and I enjoyed it for it. It's like, it was high adventure more than any sort of, I mean, science fiction, but it was more high adventure than any real science fantasy sort of thing, but, like, the basis of the story is this stranger in a strange land kind of thing, which really, like, John Carter and, you know, you read Robert Heinlein's novel, really kind of tie into a lot of elements of that stuff.
See. Again, it's got that swashbuckling adventure feel. It also introduces the concept of someone who comes to the other world having technically powers, because John Carter is from Earth, and Earth and Mars has different masses, so John Carter is able to essentially has somewhat superior strength and leaping ability. He could like Hulk leap.
Yeah, that's also something that they use to stupendous effect in the Disney film. But
actually, the effect wasn't too bad.
I think it's more so how just the design aesthetic overall just kind of bothered me about that whole movie.
The thing about if you tried to make an actual John Carter movie based off the books, it would never fucking happen today.
Because of all the racism.
You know, racism, sexism, he's a fucking asshole. He's not a perfect character.
Yeah. There'd be like kind of. I know in the past I've read somebody talking about older stories like that, and they lump John Carter in with the whole white savior narrative that everyone bitches about nowadays.
I don't know if you can really call him the white savior when he's saving aliens.
He's a white man and he's saving them.
I wouldn't say he did it by himself, because if anything, I would say that John Carter's appearance, like, kickstarted things that were already sort of brewing on Mars. He was more of a catalyst than someone who, like, is fully controlling everything that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, when you get away from, like, the John Carter, like, certainly has its roots, or isekai has some roots in the John Carter stories. I mean, the first isekai I was ever, like, wholly exposed to is one that a lot of people don't like, and that's Sword Art Online. I enjoyed Sword Art for the most part. I enjoyed Sword Art Online mainly because of the aspects that it shares with the movie Tron, which itself had, you know, also an early progenitor, shall we say, of that. You know, Stranger in Strange Land takes skills from the outside. He comes here, and all of a sudden, he is like unto a god. But after the first few episodes of that anime, it just not meanders, but it just loses. It loses what it had on me. I know what when you look at when you think of isekai. I mean, it firmly has those roots in the anime. Ben, is there? What was your first isekai?
See, that's a difficult question, because if I go back to isekai as an isekai, that's not in the current wave of isekai. El Hazard.
Sorry, which is that?
El Hazard.
I am unfamiliar with that.
You've never heard of El Hazard?
That is what I just said.
El Hazard is an anime I saw about like a group of school kids and their teacher that got transferred to a world called El Hazard, and like each kid gets like a go ahead, Red.
The actual name is The Wanderers. It's just, I don't know why the English version they changed it to El Hazard.
Fair enough. I'm just calling it but the idea is every character gets like a power, like one snooty kid gets the power to control bugs. When I say bugs, I mean they're like giant ass Starship Troopers bugs. The gym teacher like gets like super strength unless he's drunk. Jesus Christ, I haven't seen this series in a long time.
He's also an alcoholic.
That's right.
The main character gets control over machines, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Which she also, there's the ultimate destruction, like the ultimate force, the ultimate weapon, which is a machine, a woman by the name of Ifrita. And he has control over her.
Sounds interesting. I might have to give that a try.
But like I said, it's El Hazard. If I had to think of like the first wave of like, and you have to admit, El Hazard or The Wanderers or fits that description of an isekai to a T.
I don't know about to a T. I don't know if it counts as what we think of as an isekai today. But it does count. I would say it would count as an isekai.
But like I said, the first one I can think of that fits that formula, El Hazard. There's been lots of other ones that sort of mess with the formula. There was like this one Tenchi series that tried to do it, but that's long after Tenchi started sucking, where it's like what Tenchi's cousin or half brother or some character that's tangentially related to Tenchi shows up in a world where there are mecha, and the mecha can only be driven by women, except he can also drive a mecha.
That's his half brother.
Okay. But that series sucks. I forgot the name of it after.
I like that series.
Really? I hate that series.
Called War on Geminar.
It feels like it's like tangentially related to Tenchi at best. Like they want
it's
to make...
not supposed to be. It's a fucked up concept because it's actually a sequel to another fucking comic that took place a long time ago. And it's like it takes place 1,000 years after that comic.
Ah.
And it's a completely different world. It just, the way they connected it is the three goddesses of creation created that universe and they brought fucking Tenchi's little brother there.
I see.
But other than Tenchi's little brother being the main character, it's its own fucking universe and world. It's not... Well, you can count the whole harem fucking thing as Tenchi as well.
You're not wrong.
But, anyways, onto that. The first isekai I can think of in the latest years that I actually really, really liked was... Definitely have to give a shout to The Rising of the Shield Hero is fantastic in my opinion.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. That's one I haven't tried yet. Although I have talked to some very much more anime inclined friends than I am, and one of them she said she doesn't want to watch it because she doesn't like the idea that the shield hero, like that whole thing in the plot of how the shield hero is accused by this the princess of being, well, he attempted to rape her is pretty much it, and then he has to work the rest of the series to like rehab his reputation. And I was like, I told her, like, that's not the plot. Like, I have to correct her. And she's like, well, I'm still not going to watch it. It's like, you're going to write off an entire anime just because of this one plot point, which is actually the driving force behind the hero trying to make it in this world. Like, I just don't understand how she...
Like, I've met other people as well, talked to them, and mm-hmm. they've said they don't like it because of that reason. And other reasons as well, like... Oh, he enslaves these two girls that are just in love with him and stuff like that. And they sexualize younger characters. One of the characters is actually a child, even though she's in an adult form and stuff like that. And it's okay. If that's your opinion and you don't want to watch the fucking show, then don't watch the show. I don't give a fuck. It's no fucking skin off my ass.
I'm just trying to understand, like...
Well... This is number one. I think that they missed the point of lots of things with Shield Hero, because first of all, it's established in the manga and in the anime that the Shield Hero, no matter who the Shield Hero is the least favorite of the church. There's like a church of the heroes, and the Shield Hero is like, oh, and by the way, there's this one guy, but he's useless. And this is even before the Shield Hero shows up, Nafumi. Before he even shows up, it's like historically the concept of the Shield Hero has always been, you know, he is like the lowest of the low. The only population that actually likes the Shield Hero are the demi-humans, because they're like, this guy's our hero. And because the S.H.I.E.L.D. hero, like, Nafumi shows up, and he's appointed to be the S.H.I.E.L.D. hero. He gets falsely accused, as you said. But the one thing that the people are leaving out when they talk about this is now Nafumi has to, like, he's not even rehabbing his reputation. He's just trying to fucking live. And it's hard. Nobody trusts him. Nobody's listening to him. But at the same time, you know, he doesn't get the rep the other heroes do. The other heroes just show up, they do shit, and the town just gives them whatever they ask for. And you know, and they ask for a fucking lot because they're all, they, I won't say they're assholes, but they're ignorant. They don't, they treat this as like it's a video game and everyone's an NPC. So like, hey, I'd like to sleep in your house today. And they're like, oh, you're one of the four heroes. Okay. And you know, I want to eat all your food. Okay. Guess that's, and they don't realize they're basically taking advantage of the town and everything. Now Fumi has nothing. He has to like basically grow his own food, you know, hunt his own meat and stuff like that. And then slowly as he works with the townspeople, they start trusting him, not because he's rehabbing his reputation, but because he's living with them. And there's this great part where like the princess, the one that falsely accused him, shows up in town and basically says, by the way, we're raising taxes on everybody. It's going to be this much. And then Nafumi laughs and says, do you realize what you just said is you're raising your taxes to what's essentially 3 months of their pay? And it's because he's living with them. And he's the only one that's treating these people like people, not like video game NPCs out of the other heroes.
Okay, like I literally haven't started watching it or reading it yet. But no, I mean, that's kind of, from what I've read about it, that's what I got, is like, you know, he's at the bottom. He's not necessarily trying to get to the top, but he's just, like you said, trying to live. And I think that's something I'm very much enjoy getting into, is that sort of story about, you know, building yourself up again. I mean, granted, that does lean rather heavily into what has become, at least to my knowledge, the defining characteristic of an isekai story, be it anime or manga. There's always these heavy video game, you know, aesthetic or concepts, you know, in the story. You know, again, like Sword Art Online is nothing but a video game story. It's about people stuck in a virtual reality, and it's a game, but you know, the only hope they have of getting out is, you know, finishing all the levels in this massive dungeon, and then hopefully they'll be able to get their way out. And I don't even think no one really beats the game by the end of it. It's been a moment since I watched it, and it's basically just the game shut down and people are able to get out while it's shutting down, and that's about it.
But what happens is one of the fucking player characters reveals that he's actually the creator of the game.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, fuck it. I'll fight you. If you win, I'll fucking let everybody go. Which is kind of a dick move. You had the ability to release everybody the whole fucking time and you didn't do it.
Well, and that's one of the things when you look at, like, they have Sword Art Online Abridged on YouTube, which is, I'm a huge fan of that. And they, one of the thing with a lot of these abridged series is they try to make some of the plot points have relevancy, have a reason. Like, in, if I remember correctly, in Sword Art Online, like the original anime, the creator of the game doesn't even remember why he did what he did at the end of it, like with the servers shutting down and people getting jacked out of the game. Like he I think there's this huge nihilist kind of monologue that he goes on. Like by the end of it, he just doesn't remember anymore, versus the abridged one where it's basically because of programming deadlines and demands from like higher ups in the game company, the head programmer lost his damn mind and went crazy. That made a hell of a lot more sense than the original one. There's another one with these isekai. There's the In Another World with My Cell Phone or My Smartphone. And that's one of the ones that I think when you look at the isekai, like what is defined as being an isekai, and you look at this one, it's literally this guy is killed by God accidentally, and then God offers to resurrect him in another world with like one item from his previous life. So he this kid chooses his smartphone. And I think at that point, they're not even really trying to come up with, you know, with the shield hero, that story makes sense when he goes to another world. But then smartphone one, it's like, really? Like, it just doesn't ring true, you know?
Well, you have to keep in mind that a lot of the people trying to jump on the big craze is trying to invent the next gimmick, because, you know, Shield Hero has had a gimmick. Not a gimmick, but it is a gimmick. So everyone's
its gimmick made more sense.
Trying to find their next gimmick. I mean, and, you know, let me mention another series that, or a movie. Let me mention a movie, a Disney movie that could technically be considered an isekai, JT.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this guy working in a software company, and he suddenly gets zapped by a laser, and he's in this strange world where his skills as a video game connoisseur come into light and help him. What am I naming, JT?
You're talking about Tron.
Yes. Is the world badly animated and
fucking... Yes.
Should have never been made at the time?
Yes, very.
But, no, it's, you're very correct, Ben. That, God, I had a thought there and it escaped me. No, I love Tron. Like, part of the reason I love Tron, like, with that isekai thing is that, you know, Kevin Flynn gets sucked into the world of the computer, and I don't know if it's because he was a programmer, just because he's a human turned into so much data, he gets these special powers as a user within the world of the grid. Like how he can bring a recognizer back to life, or, you know, channel all this data to defeat the master control program. And that's really only applies to the first film, because, you know, when you look at Legacy is more, I don't think that there are elements in there, but it doesn't work as much in Legacy as it does in Tron. It's, I mean, I like that film, but it's just not as good as the original. One thing where I think, like, the elements of, like, the video game elements of, you know, getting supplies and upgrading your skills, that I think works a lot better within the isekai genre is when actually I started watching it not too long ago, is that time I got reincarnated as a slime.
I'm not a big fan.
Overall, it, like, again, I've only watched like the first six episodes thus far, but I really enjoyed, like, with the world building, and you kind of learn along with the protagonist. And it's a lot of fun. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect, because, you know, I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. And like I said, I also want to get into the rise of the Shield Hero. The one thing I'd ask you, Red, is there any particular isekai that you know of that you enjoy?
Off the top of my head, maybe Log Horizon.
I don't think I know I've heard of that, but what's the elevator pitch on that?
It's your average isekai. It's people trapped inside a video game. Except there's little differences. Like, their world is actually based on the real world, except it's all, everything's all, like, grown over with plant life. Like, the Earth has been abandoned for years.
Mm.
Like, what happens is a guy logs into his favorite MMO after taking a break for like 5 or 6 years, and he notices that there's like a major update. And he downloads the update and then logs in, and suddenly he finds himself trapped. And it's not like you can die in there and you'll get resurrected, but every time you die, you lose memories.
Ew.
And if you don't get good, as they say in regards to video games, eventually you just become an NPC.
Pretty much. But right. At the same time, it deals with the NPCs. It deals with Like, at first, they have NPCs moving into the small town that they make and stuff like that, and people treat them like shit, and they learn that these NPCs are actual fucking people. They have dreams and fucking ambitions and shit like that, and they suffer when you fucking torture them and shit.
Wow.
By that extension, another one I watched, again, I have a bad habit of starting anime and then not going back to them for ages, is, what's it, Overlord. Could that be considered as being an isekai as well?
It's pretty much, yeah.
Have you ever seen that one, Ben?
I have not seen Overlord, no.
Yeah, it's similar to what Red said about Log Horizon, where this guy's in, it's like this jacked up fantasy World of Warcraft sort of game, and the game is supposed to be shut down, like the servers are all shutting down, you know, the game's done, and this guy's like all, like this fanboy who's all pissed at his friends are jacking out. I was like, fine, I'm gonna stay here until the end, and then, you know, the counter clicks to zero and he's still in the game, and now he is the big bad that he's been playing, and all the NPCs that didn't have personalities before start, it basically becomes like this living world. All of a sudden he's trapped there and he's trying to make his way in it, although at one point he decides to start cosplaying as like this great hero in the game. And I don't know, just, I really enjoyed that kind of twist on the genre of what little I've actually gotten into it.
Mm. So let me name some other Western equivalents to isekai. Now there's one that, I'm surprised we didn't mention earlier. Narnia.
I can't believe I fucking forgot about those.
Cause you have, children coming into a strange magical world. They receive magical weapons from Santa Claus.
They fight the devil.
Yes, they fight the devil with the help of the Jesus allegory lion.
What, Liam Neeson isn't Jesus?
It's fucked. It's a Christian allegory, the whole fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
The funniest part about the, you know, C.S. Lewis and in Narnia is C.S. Lewis was a pagan growing up. And a friend of his in his writing group turned him to Christianity, a guy named J.R.R. Tolkien. Mm-hmm. And then when C.S. Lewis turned to Christianity, he turned hard.
Which usually happens with people with born-again Christians, yeah.
And because if you look at the Lord of the Rings, there is Christian allegory in there, absolutely, but it's toned down a little bit, but Narnia, it's like dialed up to 11.
To the point that there's this big debate, because Narnia ends fucked up. It ends with a train crash and all the kids die, except they're all able to pass into Narnia except for one of them.
Yes.
Yeah. The oldest girl.
Because she became vain.
No, that's not why she... Like, the explanation is almost like she became vain. But the actual fucking explanation, if you think about it for fucking 5 seconds, is she's a fucking atheist. Atheists don't go to heaven.
The other part of it is she, quote, forgot about Narnia. Like, all the other kids knew
she
about...
She became an atheist!
Yeah, you're right, because she thought those were just the fun games we played as kids. While the other is like, no, this really fucking happened. She kept on dismissing it. You're right. It's weird. Narnia is... I remember C.S. Lewis got a lot of shit for that. And to the point where he says, well, maybe she'll change back, and if she does before she dies, she'll be able to go to Narnia. Again, C.S. Lewis is like this really interesting case of a guy who, like, turned hard Christian and didn't know how to, like, write subtle allegory. Like if you know what you're looking for when you read Lord of the Rings, it's obvious that J.R.R. Tolkien is writing lots of Christianity in there. But if you're not looking for it, you won't notice it.
Mm. Another one is Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz is a great point. In the early books, like, if I remember correctly, Red's going to correct me, of course. Oz is not like another dimension. It's actually like a physical landmass somewhere on Earth, because I remember Dorothy actually flew over Oz back to Kansas in one book, and that's when she lost whatever device or something that got her there in the first place.
Oz is fucking weird. I'd like to say, no, it's another dimension. No, it's another country. It's never explained. Oz is just somewhere else. That's all it is.
And Oz is fucked up. But it's, because you know how the message of the first movie is there's no place like home?
That's the movie, not the fucking country.
I know. That's why I said the movie. In the books, the message is Oz is fucking fantastic. You should move here with your parents.
Really, I never read the novels. Like, I know The Wizard of Oz, the two movies, like that, and Return to Oz, which...
The Wheelers?
It gets
really... I had nightmares because of those fucking things.
It gets really fucking political as well, like the other books, because... What the fuck is his name? Frank L. Baum? Frank L. Baum was a fucking communist.
Yeah.
And Oz is like the perfect communist place. Everybody shares everything. Everybody takes care of everybody. Nobody's greedy. Nobody has wants and shit like that.
And people who are greedy punish themselves in weird ways. A great example is the Tin Woodsman. Not sure if it's the Tin Man. I think it's a different character that's also like a Tin Man. But the Tin Woodsman was like a munchkin who was in love with someone with another munchkin, but she didn't return his affection. So he slowly turned himself into a Tin Man because reasons.
I think that's just from the cartoon.
No, that was a whole book. The Tin Woodsman of Oz was a book, and that was the whole plot.
Okay.
That he's got all emo about a girl not liking him.
And he started chopping... Like, literally, it's not like a weird process. No, he was literally chopping off limbs and putting tin parts in their place.
That's one of the things people don't realize, because you're raised on fucking American cartoons and the Wizard of Oz movie. The original books were made like a grim fairy tale, like the old style of fairy tale. So it's fucking violent and it's dark. Like, the first thing the Tin Woodsman does... when Dorothy fucking gives him oil, is he starts chopping fucking heads off of fucking wolves.
It gets a little crazy, yeah. And let's talk about Pip.
Pip? Oh my god. Pip is a fucking can of worms you don't want to fucking open. So according to Frank L. Baum, Pip is 1,000 years old.
Yes.
At the same time when Pip first appeared, Pip was only 14 years old.
Yes.
Because Pip turns out to be Ozma, the Queen of Oz. And Frank L. Baum did not give a flying fuck about canon or fucking keeping things straight or any of that shit. As the books went on, Ozma turned out to be this immortal fucking goddess of Oz that has always been in Oz. She's thousands of years old, and she's half fairy and all this shit. Even though Pip was told that Mombi stole him away from his parents, and he was originally the princess of Oz and shit like that, and he's only 14 years old, it gets fucking crazy.
And doesn't the whole book series end where Ozma and Dorothy rule Oz together as, like, lesbian queens?
Dorothy's dead.
Are you sure? I remember reading that.
I don't remember that. It might have been a book, one of the books that I never read.
I think it was a
book. But I don't think it was the ending, though, because I know... Further books deal with other people that go to Oz, not Dorothy. Dorothy's an adult by the time...
Okay.
Like, at the middle of the books.
point is Red's right. Frank L. Baum is like a communist. He's a racist. He's crazy. He had like a huge thing about like really weird feminism in the books. Like weird to this day, weird.
He was in love with Ozma, I swear to God. Like, he was in love with this character that he created.
This eternally prepubescent girl posing as a boy.
She was cursed to be a boy for a while.
Yes. But you get my point that there's something creepy going on here.
Yeah. But, also, Frank L. Baum used to hated fucking Native Americans. He literally wanted them wiped off the face of the earth and would go to Congress and try to fucking push bills and shit to get the Native Americans wiped off the face of the earth.
Lovely man.
Now, I'm looking on the Wikipedia here about Western media, like, stories that count as isekais. Like, you know, I mentioned... I forget if I mentioned on mic or off mic, there's the 2008 film The Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie Chan and Jet Li.
I enjoy that movie a lot. It's not perfect, but I think that just any chance to see Jet Li and Jackie Chan fighting, it was 10 years too late at that point because Jackie has prime, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Jackie didn't know what he's doing either. It pissed me right off because... There's a scene where Jackie Chan and Jet Li are fighting, and I've watched many a Jackie Chan film. And I know the sequences he goes through when he does, like, drunken boxing. And you can kind of, like, there's a part where he gets up and he starts swinging around, and then he almost does, like, a weird kind of drunken swish back and forth and then straightens up.
Yeah, just kind of sways.
But the director cut that out. So... But at the same time, he didn't, because it switches to Jet Li talking to that kid, and then in the background you can see, you can kind of see the side, like you can't see Jackie, you can see his side, and that's what he's doing in the background.
Yeah, a couple other movies here. They had Jumanji, which does it count as an isekai if the other world comes to you?
Well, technically, the main character does go to the world of Jumanji for, like, 10 years. Now, I did have to add that Jumanji reminds me of another story, Peter Pan.
Yeah?
I don't know if I'd count Peter Pan as an isekai.
It's got isekai-like qualities. I don't know if it's straight-up isekai.
Well, the reason why I bring up Peter Pan Jumanji is both Peter Pan and Jumanji borrow an element. Well, Jumanji the movie borrows an element from the Peter Pan play, because the Peter Pan stage play made it the point that the actor for Captain Hook is the same actor that plays the kid's parents. And Jumanji did the same thing, where the hunter is also Robin Williams' character's parent, father. And I can't help but think that was intentional.
No, I think that was totally intentional. I know there's one other movie on here that I think it definitely has, like, the broad strokes of an isekai, but it's Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness definitely counts. One of my favorite feel-good movies. If I'm ever feeling down, there's two different movies I put in depending on how down I'm feeling. One is Army of Darkness. The other one is Shawshank Redemption. Shawshank Redemption is obviously not an isekai, but just saying. Either of those two movies cheers me up instantly.
Shawshank Redemption?
Cheers me up, yeah.
Andy Dufresne crawled through 2 miles of shit.
Dude, if you watch it beginning to end without stopping, you have a sensation of being reborn.
Yeah, because, I mean, the oppressiveness of the prison and all that. No, but, I mean, when you're talking about this isekai, like, before I even looked at the later part of the article in Wikipedia, I was, like, thinking Army of Darkness could work, because you have Ash going back in time to medieval England, and he brings his modern wits and know-how and, you know, fights the army of the Deadites. And yeah, I mean, it's Bruce Campbell, and what's not to love? Now, one of the overriding tropes, at least in modern anime and manga with isekai, is the protagonist has to die.
Yeah, truck-kun.
Yeah, the truck-kun, like, very often they're run over by a truck, which I'm just wondering where that first started and why all the various creators decided to hang their hats on that, because that just seems like a weird thing. They just, like, they got to die to go to the other world. Now, the best example of that, like, even though I think it's so weird, is over the last year, you know, I've started and stopped to watch a lot of anime, and dear God, I got to finish these things, is Konosuba. The fact that the kid, he doesn't actually get hit by a truck. It was a slow-moving truck, and this kid goes to rescue this smaller child, and he doesn't die because of the truck. He dies because he has a shock-induced heart attack at realizing he was such an idiot.
Well,
now, as whether they die or not before they go to the other world, which do you guys prefer, that they die, or like they die? Do they die for a noble reason? Like, what's your kind of favorite transition that you've seen in an isekai like that?
To my opinion, most authors treat it as we just need to get to the action immediately. Most people just sort of get hung up on that because they have this whole big world they want to show you, and they want to get there. Like another manga I saw that sort of.
Before you go off on one thing, talking about the guy dying by buses, I actually found a fucking webcomic on Twitter somebody was making about the guy who drives the buses.
Oh, I saw that! He's trying to create heroes to extend to other worlds!
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
But what you mentioned, there's this one manga I just started reading, and I sort of hate, and I quickly put it down because it was terrible. It was by the guy who made fucking Elfin Lied. So you know it's going to be weird and horrible.
Oh my god, are you talking about the one where the chicks get super wet and fucking disgusting? And
yeah, that one's terrible, isn't it?
I read like 3 chapters, like, this is fucking disgusting, I'm done.
I know, I read like 3 as well. It's just like the guy made Elfin Lied. People fucking love that for some reason, and all of a sudden he just keeps on trying to capture lightning in a bottle again. And, by the way, I don't think Elfin Lied's lightning in a ball. I think it's weirdly grotesque. And
like, it's the dumbest thing. There haven't been any men in the world, so women get super horny just by getting near men. Like, oh my god. How do you fucking breed if there's no fucking men?
I have no idea, but the reason why I brought that one up is because the main character goes to this other world by falling off a roof. And that sort of goes to what I was about to say, is the method doesn't matter. You don't even have to have the method have a lot of scrutiny, because if we go all the way back to Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, he wrote A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. The Connecticut Yankee tripped and banged his head. You know, so the method doesn't matter. You just need to fucking get the fucker to the other world.
You know, you say that, and the first thing that popped in my head is, was it a Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court, that episode of Transformers where
Merlin shows up and energizes the Autobots with lightning?
Yeah.
If I ever make an isekai, if I ever were to make one, the main character would go to the other world by dying when he'd be taking a shit and pushing too hard. He'd die like Elvis.
Elvis in a medieval world. Do it! Do it, Red! Do it!
To skip back to that manga that you guys were talking about there, about the women getting wet, I found it's called Parallel Paradise, I think is the one, that this one guy goes to the alternate world and he's the only man there.
Yes.
Now, like I was saying about the transitions, I mean, there are so many different flavors. I mean,
you could have four or five high school kids get on a roller coaster, and then all of a sudden wind up in a place where a little midget gives them magical weapons from a bag.
What's happening?
Dear God, that is entirely correct, Ben. The Dungeons and Dragons animated series does count as isekai.
That fucking the DM was the shittiest DM ever. They threw fucking Tiamat at the fucking party at the first fucking thing. One of the most powerful creatures in D&D.
Yeah.
We're only level one. Tiamat.
What I was getting with when I asked that question before about the transition is, like I said, I started watching that time I got reincarnated as slime. I just find it hilarious that this guy dies. There's this knife wielding maniac running down the street. He's about to kill this one dude's best friend, so the salaryman leaps in the way, dies, and before he dies and ends up in the other world, he begs his friend, is like, delete my hard drive and throw the computer in the tub, because
he says delete my fucking internet
basically
history.
Wipe his hard drive because he's got like insane amounts of porn on there and he doesn't want his family to find it.
Let me tell you about
I'm pretty sure he says just wipe my internet history. Then the fucking bonus scene at the end of the credits is his friend grabbing his fucking computer and throwing it in the tub.
And then he closes it, he has that single tear, and he kind of gives a salute or something. It's like, God, thank you for saving my life, sir.
No, they can still recover the data. We need to bury it under the water, under some rocks.
Yeah, and we'll go back every so often to check on it.
Now, let me tell you about a series that might count as an isekai, but might not. It's a great manga. It was actually in Jump, called Siren.
Never heard of it.
Oh.
What's it about?
Siren's about this guy who's like, he's like a tough guy in his high school, and a girl that was his childhood friend who's like really distant lately, is in trouble. So he follows her one day, sees she goes into a phone booth, and she takes out like a calling card. So this tells you how far back this was published, in the early teens. And she gets transported out of nowhere, and he's like, where the fuck she go? And then all of a sudden, he gets one of these strange calling cards called Siren, and he finds if he calls the phone with the calling card, he gets transported into what's essentially a post-apocalyptic Tokyo, and he has to figure out what's going on. But because he's breathing like this really weird air of the post-apocalyptic world, when he gets back, like, he starts getting these massive nosebleeds for, like, the first day, and then after that, he gets these weird psychic powers. Everyone who gets transported from the modern day to future Tokyo, like, gets these weird psychic powers, and they have to, like, fight against, these other psychics in the future that are trying to, like, destroy mankind or something. It's not deep, but it's enjoyable.
It's definitely isekai is definitely a thing. Like, I would like, there's a lot of stuff I want to check out and continue getting into. But, you know, when you watch a lot of videos on YouTube talking about isekai, and I've read any number of articles about it, it just seems it's become so prevalent, it's almost become the main proponent of manga and anime right now. Like, everyone's like, no one expects anything new because they all just expect like the next thing to be just like another isekai, you know, kind of in the way that everyone just expects every new movie to come out to be like some comic book thing, because that's become so prevalent it just kind of drowns out everything else that's available
now. There's one series that's not a manga. It's not Western. It's not even a manhwa. It's manhwa. It's a Chinese comic that sort of got my interest because most of the time this bunts the ball, but like one out of every 20 ideas it hits a home run. It's It's called My Wife is a Demon Queen.
Oh my god.
Like I said,
that I read some of that and it's fucking terrible and boring.
That, like I said, 19 times out of 20, they bunt the fucking ball. But that one time, the author comes up with an idea that's like, holy shit, that's a great fucking idea. I just wish, like, you worked on that one idea.
So what, aside from what the what is very obviously suggested by the title, what's the pitch?
Regular guy gets transported to this swords and sorcery world and finds out that he's supposed to be the hero of, like, the demon clan and is betrothed to the demon queen. Right then a coup happens, the demon queen loses most of her power, him and her get thrown off, get sent to the human kingdom where they are attending like a magic and sword fighting school, and he thinks, oh, since I'm the chosen one, I should have like these amazing abilities. He takes a test for his abilities, and it turns out he has no abilities whatsoever. But what he does have is, like, knowledge of, like, the modern world. Like, how does a microwave work? Well, he knows how a microwave works. How does a cell phone work? He knows how a cell phone works. So he finds out that there's this other class in this school that most people disrespect called like, makers. And what the makers do is they use, like, magic pens to, if they, they can, like, make, if they understand how things work and they have the raw components, they can make things with a magic pen. And he's like, oh, okay, well, if I know how this works, so he makes this. So, like, he makes a bicycle on his first day because he knows how the bicycle works. And no one there has seen a bicycle before.
Ben.
Go ahead.
Slow down.
Okay.
Because you're repeating yourself a lot, like Porky Pig.
Okay. So, first day there, like, he's taking the class, and because he knows how a bicycle works, he makes a bicycle. And then nobody's seen a bicycle before. And then he figures other things out. Like how a refrigerator works, and he makes a refrigerator, and he continually impresses people because he's able to make like these modern things with this forging ability, to the point where he eventually builds mecha suits.
And that's where I was like, fuck this, I'm out.
And what was this called again, Ben?
My Wife is a Demon Queen.
Well, I have a research project for myself later.
Like I said, he bunts the fucking ball 19 out of 20 times. But there is an interesting idea of a modern-day human that knows how things work, like, using that to sort of power play this thing. There's another isekai that sort of does something similar, where the main character in our world is an exterminator. So he goes to, like, the medieval world, and he uses his modern exterminator knowledge to, like, go to a kingdom and say, I can take care of the rats in the sewer. And they're like, okay. And they pay him to get rid of the rats. And he uses, like, his modern knowledge of traps and poisons to do that, unwittingly not knowing the fact that he kills, like, hundreds of rats. He's power leveling up.
And thus we bring it back to the concept of leveling in games.
Yes.
Now, they're one of my all-time favorite game series. Certainly qualifies as being an isekai, and that's Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, God.
Because the game series is about Mario and Luigi going to the Mushroom Kingdom, and
it's not about them going to there. They are just there.
It's Mario.
Like, if you're considering...
They're not Canadian.
If you're considering the Lou Ferrigno TV show and cartoon canon of how they got there...
First of all, I think you mean Captain Lou Albano, not Lou Ferrigno.
Yes, I did. I apologize, Captain Lou Albano. I'm sorry. Posthumously.
They were fucking plunging a tub.
Yes.
And as a plumber, I'll tell you, that was the wrong way to plunge a tub. You'd get no fucking suction.
Well, Red, maybe you should try it sometime. Maybe you'll wind up in the Mushroom Kingdom.
No.
Trust the fungus, Red. Trust the fungus.
I will as soon as you do.
But you get my point, is they never explained how Mario and Luigi got there, nor do they need to. They're just there.
You get sucked down the drain. I can't remember that stupid rap. I used to be able to remember. They're the Mario Brothers. Blah, blah, blah. Something.
You're hooked on the Brothers?
Yeah. No, there's two different ones. Hooked on the Brothers is a different one. And there's also the Mario. Do the Mario. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, that's how they ended the show.
Swing your hips from side to side.
It's sad to know that, like, a year after that show ended, Captain Lou Albano died.
He couldn't go on without it?
No, he couldn't go on with alcohol. Well, his liver couldn't take it any longer.
Yeah. I mean, but elements of the Mario story, I certainly count about towards the whole isekai thing. It's...
I don't think so. I don't think there's enough meat there.
I think there is, but the only qualifier for that is the fact that they, in no other game, in none of the media that I'm aware of, have they ever come across any other character in the whole of the Mushroom Kingdom that is also a plumber. That would, to me, make it seem like they...
That's not fair to Mario. He's a plumber, he's a fucking doctor, he's a professional tennis ball player.
He's a fight referee.
He's a fight referee, he's a bartender.
Zookeeper.
He's a zookeeper.
He's a spaceship pilot.
Spaceship pilot. Like, he has so many jobs besides plumber.
Mario is whatever the plot requires him to be.
Although I don't really trust his doctorship, just throwing pills at people.
But that's all doctors seem to do nowadays. See, all they have to do is make a Mario game where he's a wrestler, and it just comes full circle for Captain Lou.
Well, he is a Captain fighter in the Smash Brothers.
Captain Lee wasn't a wrestler, he was a manager.
Yeah.
But anyways, my point is that the term isekai sort of gets weird. I'm going to mention Riverworld here, because we talked about it in the pre-show. And, Riverworld is a series of books written in the 80s and 90s, where when you die, you wake up in a planet, on a planet that is a ginormous super Earth planet, with, like, everyone who's ever died is on this planet, and there's all these rivers.
I'd rather wake up in Quakeville.
There's all these fucking rivers with riverboats on them, and you can meet, like, Genghis Khan and Mark Twain and shit, and have adventures with them and shit. It's,
Magic Chan, take my life.
Like, it's just, it's... They even made like a sci-fi series about Riverworld. I don't think it's great, but it exists. Now there's this other. Okay. Go ahead, Red.
I'm gonna guess the main antagonist is Hitler.
I don't think he is.
Or Genghis Khan.
I think Genghis Khan's actually portrayed somewhat favorably, if I remember correctly.
He murdered more people than anyone else in the fucking world.
He also made the most babies.
We've invented atomic bombs, and Genghis Khan still holds the fucking world record for the most people killed.
Now, there's this other series that's kind of like Riverworld, written by Mark, I didn't know black people could get white people diseases, Millar, called Reborn. where when people die, they wake up in this feudal world, and the main character is this old woman who wakes up, like, as her 20-year-old self, and she's, like, trying to find her husband who died 10 years prior. And when she finally finds him, she finds out he's been living in this world, found another wife, and has kids and shit, and moved on without her. And
oh, my God, I'd rather go to Quakeville.
Reborn
when's
is...
Dimensional, when's the dimensional merge?
You want to merge with C-197?
Yeah.
But anyways, that's something else that can be considered an isekai. I don't think Reborn's very good. It's drawn by, like, what's his name? Greg...
Capullo.
Capullo, who drew lots of Batman comics that... Like, his art's middle-of-the-road Batman art.
Honestly, I think a lot of his art, it depends on who's inking it, but he's decent.
And... Middle-of-the-road.
Like, Greg Capullo is fucking awesome. Calling him middle of the road means you do not understand art whatsoever.
I don't like the dark metal art he did. Like I can see that he has technical skills, but those designs are awful.
Yeah, but that's not of his work, Ben.
I'm not saying his designs are good or shit like that. I'm just saying he's a wild fucking artist. He's fucking he spent something like 15 years mimicking Todd McFarlane to the point that Todd McFarlane would put his name on comics and people wouldn't tell that it was Capullo that actually drew it. Like, Spawn number one is, even though it says it's drawn by Todd McFarlane, he didn't draw it. Greg Capullo drew it. And same for, like, they went for 14 comics before they put fucking Capullo's name on there. And that's him when he was young. Like, this one time, there's a YouTube video where it's an interview with Greg Capullo, and he's talking about art and stuff like that, and it makes so much sense. Like, the dude fucking understands art. He's talking about drawing with symbols versus drawing actually in the third dimension and shit. And I learned so much just from listening to him.
All right, maybe I shouldn't say middle of the road, but what I will say is I didn't like his Batman art. When he who was he drawing for, Snyder or King?
Snyder. He drew for both of them, I'm pretty sure.
Ah.
But mostly Snyder he drew for.
Because I just did not like the way his Joker was just weird.
He didn't design that Joker. That was Snyder who did that.
Well, maybe, like I said, maybe I should take back what I said about Greg Capullo because my biggest exposure to him was that Batman run and just so many design issues there. And if he's not responsible for the designs, I fully apologize.
Yeah, the other thing is DC is run by committee. Somebody else could have came up with those designs and Capullo had to draw them. That's something I learned from learning about studying the New 52. All their costumes and shit. Not one person just sat down and said, this is their new costume. They actually did it in a committee, like in a fucking session where everybody sat down in a room and they designed fucking Superman's new costume and shit.
What, like RoboCop 2, where they come up with the 1001 new directives for Robo?
Kind of like that, yeah.
Jesus, no wonder people went insane.
Anyways, I can't really think of any other new isekais we could talk about. We have a good list of lots of Western themes. I know a character who could technically qualify as an isekai right now, JT.
Oh, who's that?
The current Conan the Barbarian in the Marvel Universe.
I'm trying to, but I can't find a reason to disagree with that logic. Yeah, no, sadly, that...
Conan the Adventurer.
Conan, warrior without fear. But because you basically have Conan showing up, walking around with a sword or an axe and a trench coat, teaming up with the Avengers.
Well, only some of the Avengers.
teams up with more than two Avengers, he's teaming up with the Avengers.
So if he teamed up with D-Man and Wonder Man, he's teamed up with the Avengers?
Absolutely.
Solid logic. I won't disagree.
How many Avengers does it take to count as teaming with the Avengers?
At least two Avengers and one reserve counts as a team up.
I'm almost certain like there's been an issue of Avengers where they've talked about that being in the bylaws.
And lots of people have been reserve Avengers. Ben Grimm was a reserve Avenger. Spider-Man's a reserve Avenger.
They've both been official Avengers.
That's true.
Batman's a reserve Avenger. Where is he? Where's the drugs in him?
Okay, I think we've met that dirt.
Tell me about the rabbits.
Swear to me!
Anyways,
this mask makes my head itchy. Alfred, get the stick.
Now, there is another comic I have to bring up. I just saw it. Just showed up in the last couple of years, called The Wrong Earth.
I've read that one. I don't think that qualifies so much as an isekai as it's a take on the whole dark mirror universe, like a la Star Trek's, you know, mirror universe.
Okay, explain this Wrong Earth to somebody who has not seen it.
So it's a comic created by a couple different dudes, one of whom is the artist Jamal Engel. I've friended him on Facebook, where there's Dragonfly Man. It's very much a
Batman
loving parody of Adam West Batman. And he falls through this magic mirror in one of his villains' hideouts into, like, you know, let's call it Earth 1984. And there's this dark Frank Miller-esque version of Dragonfly Man just called the Dragonfly. And at the same time as Dragonfly Man goes through, Dragonfly goes through into his world, and it's like this comedy of errors of Adam West trying to deal with Frank Miller's bullshit, and then Frank Miller Batman trying to deal with the world of Batman 66. And hilarity ensues.
I wouldn't say hilarity, it's
remember not to break a nail, boys.
I wouldn't necessarily call. I don't think that really qualifies as an isekai, Ben.
What is it missing?
Well, I think it has too much to begin with. I mean, if it was,
because it's a person winding up in a strange wrong earth.
Yeah, but it doesn't really bring anything with him that makes him any better or worse than he was in the world before. Which is, never mind the whole video game aspect of modern isekai, or even you look at the John Carter thing, like, it's just they usually have something about them or bring with them that make them better in this new world. And it only, most isekai just follows that new world. It doesn't take a look at the world that they came from like that.
I see.
Hardly ever, I don't think.
I just had to throw it in there. It's up for debate. I'll definitely give you that. But I think we sort of isekai'd this out. Any last thoughts, boys?
I highly recommend, if anyone watches any of the anime that I brought up, I would highly recommend That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. It's just a whole lot of fun. It's not perfect, but it's fun. And I think we need more of that in our lives right now. Red?
Watch The Shield Hero. Don't worry about fucking modern politics while you're watching it. It comes from Japan. It's not made by America. So there's different sensibilities. And get over it.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
I have to echo that. I love Shield Hero. I think that people really should read it because while the false accusation is terrible, it's just a starting point to do the big thing I'm talking about where the Shield Hero, Nafumi, gets to meet and work and live with the downtrodden, the people that he's the hero of, while the other four heroes are just kind of assholes using and abusing people because they're the heroes. It's really interesting of that fact, and the false accusation is the jumping point of that. But yeah, Shield Hero, check it out.
Different things like that. Like, they go on missions and they don't clean up their messes.
Yep.
Like, they leave a dead dragon that ends up poisoning the fucking water supply and shit.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But like I said, that's a big aspect of it, is they just don't think about these things because they're so lauded and treated as higher than everything else. They don't think, but Nafumi lives with it. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.